Passion, drive, and patience. The formula for winning championships is also what keeps your ride or die alive. eBay Motors has everything you need to maintain your vehicle and level it up to peak performance. Superchargers, roof racks, exhaust kits, LED headlights, and more. Whether you're into speed, power, or style, eBay Motors has you covered. With over 122 million parts for your number one ride or die, you'll always find exactly what you're looking for. And with eBay Guaranteed Fit, your part is guaranteed to fit your ride every time or your money back. Because with eBay Motors, you're burning rubber, not cash. With all the parts you need at the prices you want, it's easy to make your car the MVP and bring home huge wins. Keep your ride or die alive at ebaymotors.com. Eligible items only. Exclusions apply. See ebaymotors.com.
Hi, this is Joe Castellano. Welcome to episode 2 of the Sports Virus Podcast. Great to have you with us. Glad you could join us again after last week. We had a great first guest for this podcast, Greg Gumbel from CBS Sports. He was just fantastic. And now to follow it up, we're going to go back to talking about the San Francisco Giants. I mentioned on the last podcast that after 12 years of doing the Inside China Basin Giants podcast, we're going to an all sports podcast. But I've been wanting to get the longtime Giants coach Ron Wotus on the podcast for a long time, and we're finally going to do it. He announced that he is retiring from being the Giants third base coach after a long time with the organization, and I'm looking forward to talking to him here on episode 2. But first, I did want to talk about the Buster Posey retirement, which occurred last week. Shocking news maybe to some people, not to me. I wasn't shocked, a little surprised that he would do it this year as opposed to maybe next year or the year after. I figured that it was imminent, let's put it that way. I was hoping that he would continue to play and maybe just move over to first base, because being the catcher certainly was taxing on him physically. And let's hear what Buster had to say about why he is retiring.
The reason I'm retiring is I want to be able to do more stuff from February to November with my family. Physically, it's much harder now. And to be honest, it's hard to enjoy it as much when there's the physical pain that you're dealing with on a daily basis. Yeah, it was just getting to the point where things that I was enjoying were not as joyful anymore. And no doubt the camaraderie with the teammates in the clubhouse and, you know, the thrill of winning a great game I'll miss. But yeah, I just think weighing all those things, it was ultimately why I didn't really feel like I wavered at all during the year.
That's Buster Posey from the press conference last week. And then, of course, the topic came up right away. Is he a Hall of Famer? And I did hear some members of the media saying no, but he didn't have, you know, enough numbers piled up to be a Hall of Famer. To me, it's a no-brainer that he is a baseball Hall of Famer in 5 years. I mean, he was one of the best catchers of his era, if not the best catcher. I mean, defensively, right up there with Yadier Molina every year as the best catcher. And then offensively as well. He did have a little bit of a tail off to his career there for a couple of years when he was not completely healthy with his hip, but you saw what he did in his last season, 2021, and that, you know, to me was the real Buster Posey. I'm disappointed that he's not going to be around anymore, because, you know, he still was playing at a very high level. He still hit over 300, and, you know, he had the power going this past season. I would have liked to have seen him play at least a couple more years, but it's not going to happen. Well, the Giants, they won 107 games in 2021, and Ron Wotus was there for all of those. Now he is stepping away from his duties as Giants coach. He was the longest tenured coach in Giants history, 23 years. Started out as the third base coach under Dusty Baker, moved to the bench coach role, and eventually back to third base. And I had a chance to talk to Ron Wotus on Wednesday morning. Well, Ron, thanks so much for joining me here on the Sports Virus podcast. And my first question to you, after listening to Buster Posey talk about why he retired is, why are you stepping away now? And is it something that you're definitely going to stay with, or could we see you again in a baseball uniform?
Well, Joe, that's a great question. You know, it was great to be at Buster's press conference and to listen to the whole thing. And I definitely can relate to what he was talking about and the reasons that he was getting out of the game. You know, I don't know what the future holds, the long-term future, but at this point in time, I'm kind of stepping away from everyday coaching, kind of similar to the same reasons that Buster has. I mean, I've been on the same schedule since high school. Always been part of a team. I'm 60 years old. And I just find myself, you know, wanting more time with family and real life things that we all miss because of our jobs. And I love the game. I love the players. I want to stay in the game. I'm planning on doing something with the Giants. We're working out the details. But just getting out of that, you know, 8 straight months every single day where there's not much else in your life. It's a big commitment. So, you know, it was great to see Buster or listen to Buster giving his reasons, and mine are very similar.
Were you surprised about Posey? I mean, some people were out and out shocked. I wasn't shocked, but, you know, disappointed that he's not going to be playing anymore.
Yeah, I mean, obviously he has a lot more to give to the game, and we talked about it a little bit. I've been around him for a long, long time. You know, with the regime change coming in and all we've been through, you know, the core group, the Belts, the Crawfords, the Poseys, and guys that have been there. You know, we've talked about a lot over the years. I wasn't shocked that he was stepping away. He's always been a family man. He's always had great balance in his life and really kept things in perspective. Did I think he was going definitely do it? No, especially after the year that he had. And also that price tag that's staring him in front, the pass up $22 million, really tells you the character of the person and what's important to him in his life.
Yeah, I thought maybe he'd move over to first base. You know, it's not as taxing as playing the catching position. He's proven in the past that he could handle it over there, but I guess that wasn't really an option for him.
No, not really. Look, I think it's the time commitment away from his family. He has 4 kids. He has the twin girls that he adopted last year. And I think it really boils down to family. You know, they're both from Georgia. I know he's had, you know, a niece that he's never even met yet. And, you know, he's had a tremendous career. You know, he had mentioned to me at one point, sometimes players stay too long or they stay so long that nobody wants them and they stink. And I think that, you know, him weighing out everything that he's accomplished, he's been to the top of the mountain 3 times as a team member, and individually he's accomplished as much as anybody in the game in his 12 years. So I just think it's more of a family and time commitment, and he was ready to put his family first.
What a way to go out, because he did play really well on the team. I mean, 107 wins, and same for you to finish out on that note, although the last game, I mean, that was just so disappointing. I think I stood there staring at the television for a while, Ron, and I know I saw a clip of you actually kind of looking out at the field. I mean, this is how this is going to end, with this check swing call by Gabe Morales. What was your reaction to it, and how did that sink in with you and the team? Because that was a tough way for the season to end against the Dodgers.
Yeah, Joe, everybody's been talking about that, and in that moment, I actually threw up my arms like I couldn't believe he called the check swing to end our season. And actually, that's the second year in a row on a poor call by the umpire that our season ended. If you remember last year with the cardboard cutouts watching,
yeah,
there was a strike 3 called on Austin Slater that was definitely a ball, way down low. It was a called third strike that ended our season, and if we would have won that game, our season would have continued. So 2 years in a row, it happened. And, you know, I don't fault Gabe. You know, the check swing is the hardest call in baseball. I've always said whenever there's a check swing, and I'm out there at third base, and I see the check swing, sometimes I think they didn't go, and they do go. when you start breaking that down in slow motion, I would say 90% of the time, if it's close, they do swing. So what was more disappointing to me than the check swing was we had an inning going earlier in the game. Crawford was on first. Bryant was up with a 2-0 count. And there was two strike calls that were definitely balls, and that could have changed the complexion of that game, because we would add first and second, nobody out, and it was a low-scoring one-run game. But the check swing, a difficult call. I did not dwell on that, you know. In the moment, I was upset, but put that aside real quick as you realize your season's over and you just got to move forward saying goodbye to your players and thanking people.
I mean, you've been with the organization such a long time, and you've seen a lot of success, of course, with the three World Series and everything, and going to four of them. But this season was really special. I mean, to have over 100 wins when nobody expected it, and the rivalry with the Dodgers, which is always intense to begin with, was just incredible to watch on a daily basis, and then to see that come to fruition in a postseason series. What was that experience for you, just going through it as the season went on?
Yeah, I know those are all great points. Historic season, historic divisional race. We'll be hard pressed to see that again, I think. And, you know, look, no one expected us to do anything, never mind win the division with 107 wins. And, you know, that really was a great kind of playoff run for us to hold off the Dodgers down the stretch, because this went on for 2 to 3 weeks that we couldn't afford to lose any games. And we did a tremendous job in to win the division, and we all knew that's what we needed to do. We didn't want a one-game wild card game. So that was tremendous. To come out of nowhere, to have that season, to hold off the Dodgers, to win 107 games. But at the end of the day, it's always a bitter pill to swallow when you get knocked out in the first round. It happened to us in 2003 when we went over 100 games and we faced the Miami Marlins, and they knocked us out in the first round when Felipe Alou was the manager. And it happened again this year. And so, you know, having gone to the World Series four times, it never sits well with you when you get knocked out, because that's the ultimate goal, not how many games you win during the season. The Atlanta Braves proved it again, just like us. You know, you don't have to win 100 games to be world champs. If you play good baseball at the right time, you're hot at the right time, you can run the gamut. So it's always hard to take when your season ends and you don't win the last game that you play.
This team really had some great chemistry. I mean, I know that they don't get where they're going without Posey playing as well as he did, as you mentioned. Brandon Belt came on strong, unfortunately was hurt at the very end of the season. And Brandon Crawford, to me, has to be near the top as far as MVP candidate. I don't think he gets the national love that he deserves. He did win his fourth Gold Glove, and to me, that's a no-brainer, although I heard Buster Olney from ESPN saying that it should have been Francisco Lindor. I just get surprised sometimes at the lack of respect that Crawford gets, especially after the season that he put in this year.
Yeah, I agree with you. Look, we all fall in love with our own players, and for good reason, because we see him every day and we see the things that he does for the club. And, you know, it's all about numbers today. You know, if you have the statistics, you have the home runs, you know, people are going to be pulling for you. And look, Tatis, all the guys that they're talking about as MVPs are great candidates. But we won 107 games, to your point, and Crawford, not only offensively but defensively, was definitely our MVP. We don't want to win 107 games without him. We did have contributions from everybody. You mentioned Posey and Belt and Lamont Wade Jr. came on. Our pitching, you know, the young Duvall ended up closing games down the stretch, what we were desperate need of somebody to be able to do that, as Jake McGee was down and Raj had thrown a lot. So Rogers. So I agree with you, but I don't agree with the comment that Lindor should have won the Gold Glove over Brandon Crawford. For me, I mean, I saw him a little bit, but after watching Crawford every single day, he was the heart and soul of our team.
Yeah, I think that's the big part of it, seeing somebody play every single day. I mean, you really can appreciate what Crawford does, and you've seen him play every single day for so many years since he first came up as a young pup. And, you know, you've worked with the middle infielders like Crawford and, you know, the double play combination. Tell us about how he grew as a shortstop. I mean, he always had that athletic skill, and he's always been able to make those spectacular plays. But, you know, he's so consistent now, too.
Yeah, I think that's the key, and that's the one thing that we worked hard on. Look, good coaches are made by good players, and I definitely had a great pupil in Brandon Crawford because he had all the skills. When he came up, you know, Jose Alguacil was our first base coach here. He's managing in Venezuela right now. Did a great job with Craw, helping him, you know, get his feet settled into professional baseball and working with him. And I don't know if you ever seen the highlight tapes of him in Double A doing all his trick plays. He'd catch ground balls, slip it behind the black, I mean, behind his back. So he could always do that. He always had great hands, an accurate arm, and a tremendous glove to hand transfer. But the thing that really you got to credit him was with is, you know, when he got to the big leagues, he tried to make too many plays. And if there's one thing I helped him with more than anything was trying to get him to understand that you can't make every play. You know, you want to be consistent, let the great play take care of itself. And, you know, after a couple bumps in the road and a lot of errors in the first half, he started to buy into that. And he spoke a little bit publicly this year about this Gold Glove may have been one of his most rewarding because, you know, people were doubting him, saying he was done. He hasn't won it in a few years. And basically what he said again was, you know, he didn't try to make too many plays. He just tried to be more consistent. If he went in the hole with a fast runner hit and he knew if he dove for the ball, he couldn't make the play to stay on his feet. So he was a lot smarter. He was a lot more rested. You know, he didn't take as many ground balls as he has in the past with his age. And, you know, that's what maturity does. And my hat's off for him for putting the year together he did both offensively and defensively. And I think the extra time off and the maturity really helped him stay strong and healthy throughout the year.
You know, some of these highlight plays, they seem so instinctual. You know, you think about the Joe Panic play in the World Series with Crawford turning a double play. And there was the Tommy La Stella play in the postseason where, I mean, it just seemed so improbable that they would turn a double play, especially with a shift on and the way they had to do it. And Crawford, you know, contorting his body to be able to grab that off of the flip. These glove flips are pretty amazing these days. I mean, I don't even know. Can you work on all that stuff or is it all instinctual?
Well, you know, it's mostly instinctual. When you're good like that. You mentioned the play with La Stella and Craw on the flip, and he was on the run. I mean, Craw used to work on all that stuff a lot, and probably not in good judgment on my part. I took it away from him. I'd give him a hard time when he'd do all that stuff because I just thought it wasn't a good habit to build. But I know a lot of coaches let their guys do that because when you have an opportunity to have to make one of those plays, you practiced it. But I've always been about consistency, and these guys that are good, those things just happen for them. So you see a little bit of both. Some people work on it a little bit. For me, I just want them to be consistent and make the routine play and let your instincts take over and those great plays happen because of your athleticism.
And the Giants have put out a qualifying offer for Brandon Belt. And, you know, I think if he wasn't around anymore, they would definitely miss his bat, you know, his on-base percentage, his power. But how about the defense? That gets lost a lot of times. I mean, he may not win a Gold Glove, but he saves the infielders a lot of times from mistakes because he could dig the ball out and he just plays the position so well.
Yeah, Joe, you're right. He's another guy. He's always been an outstanding first baseman. And saves a lot of errors from his fellow infielders. And, you know, all the little things he does around first base get overlooked. You know, not for myself and Kai and everybody that watches this guy's play. What, you know, just not picking a ball out of the dirt, but, you know, he'll position himself. He'll break off the bag at the right time. He can crash on a crash play and get the lead runner out. All these things in big moments make a difference. And, you know, they don't show up on the stat page, but when you watch him every day, all these little things that he does He helps you win ball games, and not all first basemen can do those things. So, yeah, we do need to sign him back. Look, you know, we lost Posey now in the middle of that order. If we lose Belt, we're going to have to go out and pay big money to find someone to replace his offensive production and on base. Look, he's an analytical dream, right? He gets on base. He's going to have a lot of suitors. But I think he's a guy that we need to keep in our lineup, and we need to do everything we can to bring him back.
You know, I know you've worked on aligning the shifts, and that can't be an easy job. You know, these days, everybody is shifting so much. Like you said, there's so much as far as analytics. And I always wonder, like, how difficult it is for some players, like an Evan Longoria, when you're playing over on the second baseman side of second base, and it's just a little awkward sometimes. You know, you're playing out there, you're out in right field. It's just different. You know, how is that challenging as far as being a coach and trying to figure all of that out with these players?
Well, I think it's a lot easier today than it was about 4 or 5 years ago when the shift was just getting implemented and the guy beat the shift and everybody, all the pitching staff and everybody was up in arms and, you know, what the heck's going on? I think it's pretty much accepted now. You don't hear as much as complaining when the shift is beaten because the players realize it's taking away more hits and the pitcher realize they're giving up less hits because of the shift. But to your point of working with the players, you know, I'm always joking with the third baseman because I'm coaching third there, and Justin Turner, I said, Justin, you're too old to be running out there in right field. You know, every batter, they take off and they run to the other side of the field, and with two strikes, a lot of times they come all the way back, and it's almost comical. Not one third baseman enjoys it, all the extra running that they have to do. I think probably the only one guy that enjoys it is probably Manny Machado because he's the best in the game at going out there in right field. I mean, shoot, he plays shallow right field on these shifts, and he's got that cannon for an arm where he can get away with it. I mean, he is really impressive on the shift. So it's the players are buying into it. It's just part of what they do, just like looking at their cards to see where they're supposed to be. And I think it's easier today than it was 5 years ago because it's accepted.
Speaking of buying in, that is a term that I used a lot this year on this podcast when I was talking to George Contos as my regular guest. We talked about Gabe Kapler and players buying in to what he was doing, because I don't know that that was going to be easy when you guys showed up at spring training and, you know, thinking about hockey line changes where, you know, players are going to be pinched hit for in the middle of the game and, you know, and the way the pitchers are used, everything that Kapler does, this team bought into it. How did that all come to fruition?
Well, that's a great question. And, you know, first of all, Gabe did a great job. He stuck to his plan and his beliefs on how we wanted to approach this thing. And it was always team first. And there was a lot of pushback. I mean, you're always going to have pushback when you make a big change like that. And, you know, you're a new group and you're trying something different. And but I think most of the pushback, you know, came last year. In the first year that we were doing this. And I think as things evolved and players were having success and we were winning games, the pushback got less and less and less. So really it only took about a year for him to implement his approach and get these guys to buy in. And you know, Joe, when you're winning games and people are being successful, it's a lot easier to buy in than if you're struggling and you're losing. And we never missed a beat. So, you know, there was conversations with players, and Gabe made some great adjustments. You know, I've had a lot of people ask me about him, and, you know, the manager he was in Philly, and then the manager he was here. And I know he talked to the guys an awful lot. He also gave them a lot more rope, I think, than he did in the past to prove themselves and to listen to what they were saying. So I thought he did a great job managing this group of players and making this buy-in a little bit smoother. And there was a lot of give and take and a lot of open ears, and he got it done. He did a great job.
I mean, when you watched it, you know, publicly, there were times where you would see Lamont Wade maybe coming out of the game and giving a hug to Austin Slater, who's pinch hitting for him. I don't know if you would have seen that years ago. You know, that's really buying into it, that you're the ultimate team player, that you actually have a smile on your face while it's happening.
Yeah, you're right. You know, I mean, the buy-in is huge, and it's much easier for a young guy to buy in and being part of it than a veteran guy that's always been an everyday guy. And I think that Gabe treated our veteran guys like everyday guys, you know, the best that he could. And when they were struggling, they got rest. So, you know, our core group, the Posies, the Longos, you know, the Craws, the Belts, you know, they didn't get pinch hit for very, very much because they were performing so well. They did last year, and they did in moments, and we still implemented, you know, the day off. I mean, Gabe would say, okay, we're facing a tough lefty. Craw, you wouldn't play. You know, Belt, you're not playing. And we played the right and the left. And honestly, I think the players, to your point, you know, were having success. It was easier to buy in, and they didn't mind a few more off days. And that is another reason I think that, you know, everybody's been talking about this for years, give players more off days. Well, it's easier to do when you have a comparable replacement. But when you go from, you know, an all-star caliber player and you put a fringe backup in that's a call-up, AAA, a big league guy, you lose so much. But our roster was built different, and you got to credit Farhan. We had major league players on the bench. You know, the right-handed lineup had Flores and Solano and guys that, you know, had played every day. So I think it was, again, easier for our guys to buy in when they're getting a day off and they see a quality major leaguer getting the start over them. And it just steamrolled from there. It was a close-knit group. We won games, and they did. They all bought in.
Yeah, and Farhan Zaidi wins Executive of the Year, deservedly. So, you know, you think about the coaching staff, too. You have so many coaches. So there's a lot of different angles to, you know, trying to improve as a player. You got different voices. And that was another thing that was really impressive, Ron, was that, I mean, you have even veteran players that were changing their style a little bit. I mean, Posey's stance changed a little bit. You know, he didn't have the bat over his shoulder as much. And Crawford, he changed his approach a little bit, too. That was another part that I just thought, man, I didn't see that coming, that these new coaches would be able to, you know, implement that so easily.
Yeah, no, you're exactly right. Like, I think the whole staff did a fantastic job, and I think the extra help, I mean, in reality, we had three hitting coaches, not two, and, you know, you can delve into other things. There's more preparation. There's more people available to help the guys, and it's a collaborative effort on the hitting coach's job. I mean, everybody has different opinions, so if you got three coaches maybe conversing on what's the best for one guy, it goes a long way than just one guy with his thoughts and his opinion. So I think that happened in a lot of areas of the game for us, whether it was the pitching staff. They did a tremendous job as well. You know, JP and Bales and Albie helped out quite a bit. It just worked. And like you said, you got to get buy-in from the new voices. And, you know, we did. The guys, you know, stuck with their plan. I think it was just a whole new, different approach. And, you know, after last year, and we came into this spring and signed a lot more major league players, I think guys were really liking what was happening. They were getting more off days. They were treated great. And they were getting help from the coaches. So, and as I said, you start winning, and the buy-in and the success comes, everybody's a lot more comfortable with it.
You were a third base coach, a bench coach, and you worked with all these different managers. You had Dusty Baker, Felipe Alou, Bruce Bochy, and then Kapler. I'm curious just some of your fondest memories, because you mentioned the four World Series and winning three of them in a row, and just that transition from one manager to another, and you were still there the entire time, and all of the, you know, great moments, but I'm sure other challenging moments that occurred when you were, you know, going under a new regime.
Yeah, you know, look, it's just like the players, and I tell Craw and Bell, oh, you know, the guys that I know, look, it's an adjustment for me too, just not them, the different style, because, right, we were in a different philosophy and a different approach, so I think that was good that, you know, I could share my feelings with them as well, and they can share them with me and say, hey, you know, let's just stick with it, you just play, and we'll see how it goes. And everything went tremendous. So You know, it's a game of adjustments for players, for coaches, for everybody. And I know that's a cliche, but, you know, I have a job to do. And I've always tried to stay focused on what my job is. And the big picture stuff, if that's not my job, or then I'm not going to worry about it. I'm going to control what I can control, stay in my area, and do my thing. So whether it was Dusty or to Felipe to Boach and to Cap, I think probably the biggest difference in approach was obviously Cap and Farhan. But the results you can't argue with. And we all did our job, and it was a learning experience for me too, Joe. I mean, there was a lot of things that I necessarily didn't believe in that may have opened my eyes a little bit. And I also think it was a learning experience for some of our coaches, you know, with my input on why I think we should do something a little bit different. So it was actually, in hindsight, a growing experience. And something that I'm glad that I went through, because there's a lot of different ways to skin a cat, and you have to keep an open mind. And we had a great group of guys, and it all worked out.
Yeah, I mean, you saw so much, including the Barry Bonds years, and this is the last year for him on the ballot. Should he be in the Hall of Fame?
Well, for me, he should. I mean, look, come on. How do you keep Barry Bonds, the home run king, out of the Hall of Fame?
Right.
You know, I mean, the steroid thing, look, I mean, we don't know the number of players that were doing it through that era. And pitchers. There were a lot of pitchers that were on it. So everybody was getting an edge. And, you know, players were always getting an edge in this game, whether they're taking the red juice back in the day or the greenies or their steroids or whatever they're doing, they're finding an edge. And the guy would have made the Hall of Fame regardless of what happened with the home runs later on in his career. So, look, I'm partial, just like the Bay Area loves Bonds and what he did for this organization. I saw this guy every day, and there's nobody close to the talent that he had at home plate as a hitter. I mean, and I say that without any reservation, the greatest hitter I have ever seen for years and years and years, and the best players in the game don't even come close to him today.
Well said. All right, to finish up, you've had, you know, several interviews for Major League Baseball managing jobs, and I always wondered, you know, how much of a dream that was for you, or, you know, how you handled the disappointment of not getting those and then just kind of, you know, ratcheted up again to be a coach, because, you know, that's not always easy. I mean, you definitely were qualified to be a major league manager. There were times there where, I mean, it seemed like a no-brainer. You're coming off World Series championships. You're one of the best coaches in the game, and it didn't happen. So how have you been able to, you know, just deal with all the emotion involved in that? Because I know that would be something that would have been great for your career.
Yeah, Joe, that's, you know, I'm glad you brought that up. It would have been nice, you know. Look, when I started managing in the minor leagues when I retired as a player, or forced retirement, right? I couldn't get a job, right? A minor league job. So I took a coaching job with the Giants, and I managed 7 years, and I loved it. When I got to the big leagues as a coach, I wanted to manage, and I probably wanted to manage for a good 15 to 18 years and got interviews, you know, always got passed over, didn't get an opportunity. And, you know, came a point about 5 or 6 years ago where it was something that I didn't concern myself with. And I was at peace with, you know, what I've done as a coach, you know, the World Series and all that we accomplished. I've had tremendous responsibility here. And I'm sincere when I say that, you know, the last 5 or 6 years, I had no desire to manage because I was, you know, kind of tired worrying about it. The yeah. game was changing, and I was at peace with the job that I had to do, with the responsibility, and accepted that this is my role. And even to this day, right now, I can honestly tell you it's not something that I think about. I've had a tremendous career. I've been blessed. I've been in the same place for 24 years with great people, and this organization has been like a family to me. And I'm just blessed to be able to have the run that I had. And so I don't think twice. But I will say this, Joe. I would have done a fine job as a manager. There's no doubt in my mind. that I would have been able to have some success doing that just as I did as a coach. But I don't think twice about it anymore.
That's good to hear. And yeah, I agree. I think he would have been a great major league manager. I always thought of that about Tim Flannery. I mean, he was a minor league manager on a team that I covered in Rancho Cucamonga. We won the Cal League. And I always thought, man, Tim would be great. And I think the Giants have been so lucky to have coaches like you and Tim Flannery that, you know, could have been great major league managers as well, but ended up being unbelievable coaches for the World Series runs.
Yeah, you're right, and it takes a village. It takes all the coaches when you win a World Series, and Flan did a tremendous job for us at third base and with the bunting, and of course we had Rags and as a pitching coach and Gardy. And, you know, I'm kind of amazed the way the game is today. You know, a coach has one good year, and everybody wants your people. Well, we went to the World Series, you know, 3 out of 5 years, and nobody wanted our people. And, you know, it kind of shake my head at that. It says, you know, if it was in today's game, you wouldn't be able to keep that staff together. So it things have evolved, things have changed, and, you know, different people are getting hired for different reasons and different philosophies, and that's okay. The game evolves. But I'll tell you what, I wouldn't change anything in my career. And the people that I worked with, those coaches that you mentioned, I can't say anything more than they're family to me, and some of the greatest memories in my life have been shared with them.
All right, Ron, thank you so much for the time, and always appreciated any of the interviews that you gave me when I was at the ballpark all the time, and look forward to seeing you in some type of role with the Giants, and I hope that you'll be happy with anything that comes your way here in the near future. Thank you very much.
Joe, always good being with you. I appreciate your friendship over the years. And I'll see you at the ballpark. I'm sure I'm going to be around. So thanks, and it was good being with you.
That's Ron Wotus, 34 years in the Giants organization and 24 of those seasons on the big league coaching staff. Great to have him with us here on the Sports Virus podcast. We'll be back again next week. I'm Joe Castellano. Thanks for listening on the Believe Podcast Network.
Thank you for listening to Believe. You can show support to your host by subscribing to the show and giving us a 5-star rating on your preferred platform. Check us out at Believe.com and search for BLEAV on YouTube.
You know when you're listening to a true crime story that has an unbelievable plot twist that makes you stop in your tracks? That's what our podcast, People Are the Worst, brings you with each episode. I'm Rachel.
And I'm Rebecca. We're identical twins who love true crime cases that make you say, "Didn't see that coming," and we hate the people responsible for them. Listen to People Are the Worst now on Apple, Spotify, or wherever you get your podcasts.